shit.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures. White Oak Pastures cattle are raised in a manner that has stood the test of time. It begins with southern sunshine, unpolluted country air, and fertile coastal soil. The cattle are allowed to roam the pasture and graze freely on the sweet native grasses all of their lives. For more information, go to whiteoakpastures.com. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking bees and honey. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, give us a call at 718-497-2128. Bees are fascinating and vital to our planet. Even more intriguing are beekeepers. We are lucky to have Megan Pasca, an urban beekeeper in Brooklyn, New York. Megan has been featured in National Geographic, ABC Nightline, and foodcurated.com. Meg, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you were on before. You were on promoting BK Farmyards and the...
The pie contest.
Yeah, that was the same show as the Haiti show. Welcome back. Glad to have you back. So when you were on last time, bees were illegal. Mm-hmm. In terms of, well, keeping bees in New York was illegal. Please tell us, what changed? What happened?
Well, they're not illegal anymore.
So what was the deal before?
There was a health code that basically classified honeybees with other sort of stinging venomous insects and dangerous wild critters. So, you know, it was kind of unreasonable. But, you know, the health department, you know, overturned it. So we're good to go. I mean, they're totally domesticated. People have been keeping honeybees for thousands of years. So
what does this mean for me in picking up a jar of local honey?
Well, it means that it's going to become increasingly more accessible to you. Local, New York City, Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx honey, like all of it is going to be much more accessible. Maybe not this year, but the following year. This year, there are a lot of new hives that have been started, and it takes about a year for them to become established. But once they become established in that first year, the second year, they really start to produce a lot of excess honey. So it'll be a lot easier to find local honey in your neighborhood next year.
Well, that's definitely great news. So we have to talk about this phenomenon of beekeepers and bees. I just recently read an article in the New York Times about the beekeeper at the White House. Do you attribute Michelle Obama and the hives at the White House to everyone like looking at beekeepers, or is just, have you guys always been around and we're just catching up?
I think that this sort of resurgence of beekeepers has been going on for a couple of years. You know, there's been a slow build up, especially as colony collapse disorder has been publicized. But I think when the White House got their hives, it definitely boosted interest in the cause, for sure.
Now, you just mentioned a term that I have no clue about. What is that? Is that bees going the wrong direction?
Colony collapse disorder is a relatively new phenomenon. Basically, bees sort of disappear from their hives. They show signs of illness, and then they just gradually disappear. And then the few bees that are left generally are not strong enough to survive. So
Is this a climate change issue?
You know, it's actually a culmination of a lot of different causes. You know, I think that most people now suspect that stresses on bees, especially commercially kept bees, allow for pathogens that are already carried by the bee to overcome the bee and weaken their immune system. And then in addition to that, there are pesticides that impair the nervous system of the bees. So it's basically, they're getting it from all sides and can't really, they're not strong enough to remain healthy. So that's basically what's happening. So a lot of colonies throughout the world, really, not just in the United States, also in Europe, are dying or just basically disappearing. It's suspected the bees fly off and then just die somewhere. They don't really have any sign of their existence anywhere else, really.
So what does it mean to be a beekeeper? What kind of tools do you have? Because when people hear me saying, oh, I know this person, she's a beekeeper, and they're looking like, what? What do you mean? What does it mean to be an urban beekeeper in large and small cities?
Well, I personally, my setup, and I know a lot of other beekeepers in the area, they keep their hives on rooftops so that they have limited the access to them. They don't have to worry about the flight pattern sort of like being at head level. So if you have them on the ground in your yard, you have to worry about people walking past that flight pattern and getting bees like tangled in their hair. So when they're on the roof, it goes way overhead. You don't have to worry about pedestrians crossing in front of it.
And what about this? I always call it like a dresser drawer.
Yeah, it's called, people call it a Langstroth hive.
Oh, though, okay.
I was corrected recently and told that technically it's called a Dedant hive. You know, it's kind of an upgrade from a Langstroth hive. So basically what a Langstroth is, it's basically the standard beehive that most people use. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they use this specific hive, and it basically compiles of almost, they look like dressers that you stack on top of one another with frames of, you know, that the bees would build a comb in. There's usually 8 or 10 frames per box, and you just keep stacking it up, giving them more room. And as they have enough room for brood, which is basically eggs and larvae, they'll start storing lots of honey, like nectar and pollen. And then when they have an excess of that, you can take one of those drawers, basically take the frames, uncap them, and then put them in a centrifuge and easily extract the honey. And then you can just take those frames and put them right back in the hive. So it's very easy. It streamlines the process, and there's minimal damage to the hive.
So all a person will, more than all they need. So if you have this, I'm going to call it dresser drawer because you said two different things and I can't pronounce them. So you have this dresser drawer.
It's called usually a super.
Super. Mm-hmm. And they have these plates in the inside. Is that all? What are the other tools?
Okay, so you've got the hive and the frames, and there's usually a stand and a cover.
Right.
You need a hat and veil. At the very minimum, you need a hat and veil, you need a hive tool, you need a smoker, you need a bee brush.
I love the smoker thing. Oh my gosh, I was on some website that had all these pictures of vintage beehive veils and tools. It's really neat.
Yeah, they're pretty utilitarian looking. There's something kind of romantic about it. And then when, you know, sometimes I walk down the street carrying one and people are like, what is that? They want to know what it is. And then when they find out what it is, they're like totally hooked.
So every beekeeper, you said a centrifuge, and I've seen that before. That's basically the honey comes out. That's unfiltered when it's in the centrifuge.
It's unfiltered and it's raw. So all the live active enzymes in it are still present. It hasn't been pasteurized like the stuff that you would get in a grocery store.
Okay, cool. So we're actually going to get, we're going to take a short break. We're talking to Megan Pasca. We're talking all things bees and honey. We're going to have a conversation about her last 2 days in the world of beekeeping. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. In the studio, we're talking to Megan Pasca, America's cutest beekeeper, according to Huffington Post.
I hustled.
Don't you love that title? I call it the sexiest beekeeper, but it's what's up with that? I mean, the article is absolutely great. It's still up. People can go to Huffington Post. What section is it under?
It's in Huffington Post Green.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and there's tons of other great beekeepers on there, like people who have more knowledge than I do, who are definitely cuter than me, but I hustled for that. I have to admit, I will admit to the world that I hustled for that. I wanted to write a blog post for Huffington Post. I wanted to like win cutest beekeeper, so I just hustled. Emailed everyone I knew. I was like,
booyah! You have it. So talking of other people beekeeping, I think you're absolutely fabulous. And women in beekeeping, is that a traditional role? Has it always been women, or is it men that's doing the beekeeping?
You know, I mean, here traditionally I would say that the backbone of the established sort of beekeeping community it's almost predominantly men. I mean, it's a lot of men, but I've noticed that when I go to beekeeping meetings in the area, there are tons of women getting into it. So, and I'm, you know, all the people that I'm working with this season with hives are all women, so it's definitely becoming
amazing.
There are more women involved in the beekeeping community now, I think.
And I think people will be shocked to know that the origins of beekeeping and people of color around the world that are doing beekeeping. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm that knowledgeable in terms of the origins of beekeeping, but, you know, I mean, we just started keeping Kenyan top bar hive at Eagle Street Rooftop Farms for educational purposes. And, you know, I mean, there are people who've been keeping bees in Africa for thousands of years.
Exactly.
In Europe, thousands of years. I mean, you could trace the lineage back to ancient Egypt. So people have been keeping bees for a really, really long time. They're as domesticated as you can get, really.
Wow, amazing. So tell us a little bit about your journey in becoming a beekeeper.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, everything that I've gotten myself into in the past few years is all related. And you know, I lived in Baltimore a few years ago, and I was really into gardening, and I got really into home brewing with an ex-boyfriend. And, you know, it's like when you get involved in that sort of DIY community,
right,
you find people who are doing lots of other projects related to that same sort of spirit. And so I was going to these homebrewing association meetings, and I met this really nice guy who, you know, I'd seen him dozens of times before, and he came with a bottle of mead that he had made. And it was like, I was like, oh, I'd had mead before that someone had got from a liquor store.
That's just like a beer, like a really strong beer.
It's honey wine.
Oh, honey wine. That's right. You told me that before.
Wine. Yeah. And when it's bad, it's disgusting. But when it's good, it's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought this tulip poplar mead, and I was really hesitant to try it. But when I did, it was really impressive. It was really smooth and sweet, but not too sweet, and had this like berry flavor, and it was tulip poplar honey that he had used, and I found out it was from his own bees. So I just kind of was like, wow, I have to hear all about it. And he was like, okay, well, I'll tell you a little bit, but you should just go take the class. So I did. And then I took the short course in beekeeping in Maryland that was taught by the Maryland State apiary inspector. And then, you know, by the time I decided I was gonna do it, I was really over Baltimore. I mean, I love Baltimore, but I was like, I need to move on. So I moved here, and I kind of put that dream on the back burner until...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. And then the building I was living in was purchased by these two amazing women, Katrina and Erica. They're my landlords. They live in the building, and they built these raised beds for me to garden in, let me have access to the rooftop, the basement workshop, and when I mentioned that I was interested in keeping bees and I had taken a class, they were like, yes, let's do it. Even though it was illegal, they were like, whatever. And I have to also say that my neighbors have been amazing. They've been so amazing. They know, like, the homeowners are on either side. They know that I have bees and they're supportive of it. I mean, they're not enthusiastic. They're not up there, like, with pom-poms cheering for me every time I do an inspection. But, you know, they're like, fine, it's cool. You know, as long as they don't, like, get into my house, I don't care. And then they get honey. during well, the harvest
course,
season.
Well, of course, that will make anyone happy. And speaking of hives and your bees, you have to tell us about your weekend. I follow you on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff, and I saw the pictures. What happened?
Okay, well, nothing's really happened yet, but for those of you that don't know, the month of May is swarm season. So basically, any hives that were started last year that made it through the winter build up so quickly this spring that they need to either be split manually or they will swarm. And swarming is a natural phenomenon. It's actually quite harmless to people.
So what does that mean?
It basically means that, okay, if you think of a colony as a superorganism, basically each bee can't live on its own outside of the colony. Mm-hmm. They're sort of one entity. So basically this one entity gets so big that it needs to split. I mean, it becomes two, basically. So what'll happen is as they start to feel like they're running out of room, they'll sort of constrict the queen in terms of her egg laying. And then eventually they'll have some cells with queens in them. And then they'll split, basically.
So what did you have to do? Were you moving? You were moving hives?
Well, I had been doing weekly inspections of my bees, and there was a little bit of rain, and the bees just sort of like went through this boom. And I went up there and did an inspection after. There were two swarms in the area that week. So I went up and I did an inspection. And when I went in there, I was like, whoa. There are a lot of bees in here. They're definitely going to swarm. So I caught it. And, you know, I called up some beekeepers that I knew. I was like, these bees are going to swarm. I need to do something fast. And I didn't have enough woodenware just to, like, split them up.
Gotcha.
So I had to do, like a makeshift split. And even still, there are so many bees in the original hive. It just overwintered so well and just like went into this like great boom this spring that they are still congested in there. So I had to set up a bait, a swarm catcher, basically.
Oh, wow.
Which is basically a cardboard box with a hole cut in it. And then a pheromone lure.
Will you put them back in the hive, or when they just
truthfully
die?
No. I'm probably just going to box them up and give them to another beekeeper, like in Westchester or whatever. I mean,
so how many hives do you have that you had to do this for? Every hive that you're attending to?
No, just for my personal hive that overwintered, that made it through the winter this year. I don't have a ton of hives. I'm not like a commercial scale, or mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not even a production beekeeper. I don't like do large quantities of honey. So I had one hive that overwintered out of one.
So, but you have other hives that you are attending to.
Yes, I'm working with someone in Carroll Gardens, a gentleman named Gennaro, who runs Eco Brooklyn, which is basically like a green building mm-hmm. Contractor. I'm working with Stacy from BK Farmyards.
We love Stacy. Hey, Stacy.
I love Stacy too. She's rad. And so we've got some bees in Crown Heights. And then I'm working with Annie Novak over at Eagle Street Rooftop Farms. We've got three hives there. And then I've got now three hives of my own on my rooftop. So
cool.
Yeah.
Wow. If you're listening, isn't this fascinating? I told you bees are fascinating. We're actually going to take a short break and gonna talk more with Meg about honey, baby. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is being sponsored by White Oak Pastures. For more information on White Oak Pastures, go to whiteoakpastures.com. Let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. We're looking out the window now. Wow, someone is having some great fried chicken here at Roberta's. Mm-hmm. Honey child, we have Meg Pasca of Brooklyn Honey talking all things bees. So, I have to ask you this question. It's kind of funny.
Okay.
Secret lives of bees. I know beekeepers are like, oh my God. Have you seen it? Did you read the book?
Did you see the movie? I saw the movie, and I was like, I wish there were more bees in this movie.
Did I see any bees? Oh, they had like a honey house. I don't even think I saw it.
And Queen Latifah teaches Dakota Fanning about sending the bees love and all this stuff.
That was the only part. Oh, they made some biscuits, I think, and they put honey on it.
Yeah.
They really didn't have it. Are there any other movies, your favorite movies, that have like bee or books?
God, this is embarrassing. There is this one scene. The only thing that's really coming to mind is in that movie, you know that movie Fried Green Tomatoes?
Yeah.
You know that scene where she's hanging
Julia
out.
Julia Roberts.
No, Julia Roberts isn't in that movie.
Who's that? She's in Fried Green Tomatoes.
What's her name from Weeds? Who's that woman who's in Weeds? I forget her name. So she's with her friend companion, and she like walks up to a tree and with like no smoke, no protection, reaches in and pulls a chunk of honey out of tree. And I was like, wow, that's so awesome. But then like now as an adult and a beekeeper, I'm like, that is totally not realistic.
So beekeepers, I'm going to make the assumption after hearing the story that when you guys see beekeeping in movies, it's like, yeah.
No, I like it. I mean, any exposure, like, you know, to beekeeping that the public gets, I'm like totally cool with personally. As long as it's not like bees attacking children and stuff, then I'm cool with it.
So let's talk about honey. I've had your honey before. I had it during the winter after you sold out of all of your honey.
Yeah, I've got like a little bit of my own personal stores left, and I don't even eat that. I'm like so sentimental about it. I just hold on to it.
So the different flavors, I never really, how do you come up with the name of like the honey blossom? Is it just based on taste or the bees?
You don't, not around here. Usually, you know, in order for a honey to be labeled as a certain type of honey, the bees have to be placed in basically pasture where they could forage, and it has to be like acres upon acres of forage that's just that one crop. But here it's like, it's not possible. So what you get here is usually like wild tree honey. So, you know, based on what trees are in bloom during certain times of the spring and summer, your honey will have very different flavor. Like early spring honey is typically like a lighter color. It's kind of like almost like chartreuse a little bit, and like more herbal and sweet. And then some people even say minty. And then the later honey that you get, like the honey that I got in September, is darker, has like almost like a sweet tobacco flavor. It's a little spicier. So you notice that, and it's all the trees. I mean, New York plants amazing trees.
We have trees in New York.
We have lots of trees. And then New York City's got the Million Trees Initiative, so there's going to be even more trees. So,
and some of you cook a lot. I see you doing your thing. So what are some of your favorite recipes using local honey?
Well, I keep it really simple. I think the honey is really good, and I don't really like to dilute it. And to me, I think it's a very precious substance, knowing how much work goes into making each, like, drop of it. It makes you really like cherish it. So I typically just put it, like, I either eat a spoon of it if I'm feeling like I have a sweet tooth, and I just get a spoon and I just eat a spoon of it, and that's like the equivalent of a candy bar for me. Or I make this really good honey mint tea. I pull some mint out from my garden, I brew some black tea, and then I just mix some honey in there. It's just steep it really, like, not very long. It's sort of like really refreshing and amazing. And then I like it just on toasted wheat bread.
Yeah, two things I want to ask you. So I've been doing, someone told me years and years ago that if you have allergy problems, just basically have a spoon of honey. So that's true, huh?
Well, I don't think that it's been proven, but, you know, I've given honey to a lot of my friends who suffer from allergies, and they say that after a week or so of, like, eating a little bit every day that they've noticed that they don't suffer from their allergies as much. But, you know, it's like eventually you don't usually have allergies all season long either. Right. So it could be a little placebo effect, but I mean, there could be something to it. I don't think that it's been like tested. But you know, I mean, there are worse things to do to your body than eat honey to try and like cure your allergies.
I'll tell you what though, speaking of recipes and honey and allergies, even though this has nothing to do with allergies, mm-hmm. I tried some Salvatore Brooklyn ricotta, the smoky mm-hmm. ricotta, and I got some local honey from Green Grape Provisions.
Nice.
And I just drizzled the honey on there. I'm trying to figure out if I put something else on it. It was so good. I actually yeah. took it to a potluck and people were going on and on and on about it.
Yeah, there's a Five Leaves. Have you ever been to Five Leaves? Sort of like Greenpoint, Williamsburg. It's no. right. It's right near McCarran Park. They have a dish. They make their own fresh ricotta, and then they put some they put fresh figs and thyme and honeycomb, and they have like toasted fruit bread, and that's really and a little bit of smoked sea salt.
Oh, that's what I really put on good. Top. I forgot. I put rosemary on there. I put fresh rosemary just a little bit on top. Yeah, that sounds good. Awesome. Five Leaves, huh?
Yeah, and then also Polly G over in Greenpoint.
Oh, we love Polly G. What's up, Polly G?
Polly is the best. He is this summer. He already is like on me. He's like, I want like a liter of honey because I'm gonna make a mascarpone fig and honey dessert pie with your honey, so you have to save some for me.
So talking about the future, what's next for you? Because I have to tell people too, we didn't talk about this at all, but not only do you are you a beekeeper, you have chickens.
I have four hens, egg laying hens,
and mushrooms.
I'm working on adding mushrooms to my repertoire, but the logs keep drying out. I'm just trying different methods, but I'm hoping that this year I'll have lots of mushrooms.
Gardening. What else?
Growing
what else?
Vegetables. And then I'm starting to get into it's not really foraging. It's like more like wild cultivating. I'm my next project is to basically trap snails. The snails have been decimating my garden.
Oh, yeah, you told me about
then,
this.
And then sort of raise them in a tank, give them clean food to sort of clean them out a little bit, and then eat them.
Yummy. Invite me over.
Would you really eat them?
Yeah, I'll try. Yeah, awesome. You told me you put it in what, olive oil and what else?
Yeah, just olive oil, a little garlic, and maybe some thyme or something.
Yeah, I'll try it. So if people are listening and they want to get honey from you, or they even want a hive on their rooftop, how can folks reach out to you?
Well, you can go to, I have a current website right now. It's brooklynhoney.com, but I'm actually transferring all that over to a new website, which will go live this week, actually, brooklynhomesteader.com. It's actually going to be more like an all-inclusive sort of website. You can buy honey there, and then you could just read entries, not just from myself, but from other like-minded people here in Brooklyn that are doing their own projects, whether it be composting, you know, raising rabbits for meat, foraging, canning, making their own cheese, all that stuff. So, and my email's on there. You could just send me an email if you have any questions regarding honey or keeping bees.
We forgot to shout this out as well. What stores? I think you're going to be in a few retail spots in Brooklyn.
Yeah. There's Whisk on Bedford Avenue. It's a kitchen store. They're awesome. They've got amazing stuff there. And then also in Greenpoint, Brooklyn Standard Bodega also carries my honey. You know, I try to keep it kind of local. So those are the only two places right now that will be carrying it. But, you know, I'm open to other venues as well,
aka hyper local. Meg, you know I love you. You're one of my favorite people in urban homesteading community in BK. We're out of time. Can you believe it?
It goes by quickly.
Thank you guys. Thank you for coming on Hot Grease. We'll definitely have you on again. Thanks. Maybe during the summer we'll do a honey tasting or something. Invite a few people on.
Sounds good.
Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday right here at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Hearing on Hot Greece today, Megan Pasca receives a free Zagat New York City Food Lover's Guide. Zagat's New York City Food Lover's Guide is a one-stop resource to locate exotic ingredients, select the perfect caterer, shop for cookware or supplies, choose the finest gourmet foods, and more. For more information on Zagat, you can go to www.zagat.com. Thanks for listening.